You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. The NFL Podcast with Gil Alexander and Dave Kelner.
Hello, everyone. A warm welcome along to the latest edition of the NFL podcast here with William Hill, ahead of the divisional round of playoff games this weekend in the National Football League. Four games to look at: the Seahawks at the Falcons, the Texans at the Patriots, the Steelers at the Chiefs, and the Packers at the Cowboys. Dave Kelner here in the studio in the UK, joined on the line now by live from San Francisco, Gil Alexander, the host of the Beating the Book podcast. First of all, it's a warm welcome to you, Gil Alexander. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing very well, Dave. How are you?
I'm very well. I'm looking forward to one of the best weeks of betting action in the NFL season, Gil.
Oh, I think it's, you know what? I think this is where it peaks. And I think, you know, after this weekend, sadly, there's only three games left after this weekend. So we really have to enjoy this while we can.
And we were talking off-air about the bookmakers last week getting crushed in Vegas, Gil.
They were. Not that we're going to shed a tear, Dave. Let's not mistake anybody here. But, you know, Wild Card Weekend was the first opening playoff round since 2001, and just the third since the AFL-NFL merger, which is back in 1970, and that excludes 1 year, this strange strike year in 82. But to see all four games decided by 10 or more points. And you have to go back to the divisional round in 1990 to find a postseason weekend with four favorites winning by 10 or more points. So that was a real rarity, what we saw last week. If you were on the right side betting-wise, you know, you enjoyed that tremendously. I think if you're just a fan who wasn't betting, you were like, well, this is really exciting. But, you know, for those of us who are bettors, we could always make something exciting out of nothing if we're on the right side.
We can indeed, Gil. Let's talk about the divisional round of matches this weekend then. And we start with the Seattle Seahawks at the Atlanta Falcons. And the Seahawks are 21-10 on the money line. The Falcons are 2-5. And this spread is now 5 points. The Seahawks plus 5 at 10-11. The Falcons minus 5 at 10-11. And these two teams have met already this season. It was a controversial win for the Seahawks, 28-26. That was at CenturyLink Field earlier on this season. The Falcons were looking to win the game on that occasion, and Richard Sherman got away with a pass interference on Julio Jones late in the fourth quarter. They've also met in the playoffs before as well, these two franchises. That came back in the Georgia Dome in 2012. But back then, Russell Wilson had little experience, and Matt Ryan's Falcons just edged that encounter, Gil, and that remains Matt Ryan's only playoff win to date. Since then, the trajectory of the two quarterbacks and their careers have gone vastly differently, with Wilson 8-3 in the playoffs, and he has a Super Bowl ring as well. So Matt Ryan and the Falcons look to gain a little bit of revenge on the Seahawks and obviously continue their journey in the playoffs.
That playoff game that you're referencing, you know, several years ago was a classic. That was a great football game. It was really, as you intimate, at the time was our first real introduction to what would become the Seahawks years, if you will, this current Seahawks era. That was when we first realized, man, this football team is going to be good, and it's going to be good for a long time. And sure enough, that's exactly what happened. And you're right. We thought, man, maybe the Falcons will just show up in the playoffs every year after that. And they really never did until now. As far as the game earlier this season, more pertinently, you're absolutely right. Richard Sherman really just absolutely assaulted Julio Jones on that final play. No flag. And the Seahawks were able to preserve a two-point win in week six. And what the Seahawks did in that particular game, by the way, all four of these games this weekend, Dave, are rematches
Yes.
of earlier games this season. What the Seahawks did in that game is they had Richard Sherman shadowing Julio Jones for much of that game. As soon as they stopped doing that, the Falcons stormed back in that game. And then in the fourth quarter, they put Sherman back on Jones and helped them preserve the victory. So the real question heading into this one, and they don't have Earl Thomas. The Seahawks are without Earl Thomas here. The real question becomes, do they put Sherman on Julio Jones no matter what and break out of their standard cover 3D? I guess that's the big strategical question in this game. But although they had Earl Thomas, the Seahawks were without a mess of players, including Thomas Rawls, their starting quarterback, C.J. Procise, their backup running back in that game. Michael Bennett had to leave that game early. And so there were, I think Cam Chancellor was out of that game as well. So they were really hamstrung in terms of their personnel. The Earl Thomas thing, though, I don't want to gloss over that. That's the biggest personnel difference of all of them, though. Thomas on the field this year for the Seahawks, and I get this from Bill Barnwell over at ESPN, they allowed, with him on the field, 7 touchdowns, but got 10 interceptions, allowing an opposing passer rating of 77.8. That'd be the third best mark in football. With him off the field, and that's what will be this Saturday, he won't be there. Seattle has allowed 9 passing touchdowns, intercepted just 1 pass, and have allowed opposing quarterbacks a 99.5 passer rating. Trust me, that's much better. And they would have allowed the third worst rate in football, just between the Jets and the Browns. So that's what Matt Ryan and the Falcons offense, the high-powered Falcons offense, which scored 30 points in 11 games this season, which is the most games crossing that mark by any team in 3 seasons, that's what they're going to be feasting on. That's what they're going to be hoping to exploit. It's really strength against strength. You have a great Falcons offense against what can always be, on any given day, a great Seahawks defense.
I mentioned at the top of the preview, Gil, the playoff winning experience that Russell Wilson has when you compare that with Matt Ryan. Do you see that as a factor going into this encounter?
Yeah, I mean, Ryan's a veteran too, and although he doesn't have, you know, as much postseason experience as Wilson, I don't know that I would lean on that as a huge factor. For me, this game really does come down to the other side of the ball that we haven't discussed, which is, in this case, the Falcons defense. So specifically about the Wilson part of it. You know, Russell Wilson, this season from week 10 on, third in QBR, tied for second in completions on throws of 16-plus yards, down the field. So he's been really successful, but he won't have Tyler Lockett here. So the question becomes, that Atlanta defense, which is the real Achilles on this field, they're probably the worst unit that we're going to see on the field this weekend. They finished the year 29th in rush defense, according to some advanced stats. Can the Seahawks, who looked really good on the ground last week against the Lions, really got Thomas Rawls going, can they continue that against the Falcons this weekend? A Falcons run defense that is very weak. And to answer your question, I don't think it comes down to Wilson and Ryan. I think they'll both perform okay. I think Ryan has the bigger challenge for sure against the Seahawks defense. But I really think the Seahawks show up in this game. And I don't know it's going to be. I don't know that it's going to be because of any deficiency from Matt Ryan so much as it will be an Atlanta defense that just can't get it done in the way that the Seahawks defense can ultimately.
The Seahawks plus 5 points. Are you thinking the Seahawks can win this match outright as well, Gil?
I think they can. I've certainly taken the points, that's for sure.
The Seahawks at the Falcons is the first game of the divisional round of playoff matches this weekend. Let's move on to the Houston Texans at the New England Patriots. This is in the early hours of Sunday morning here in the UK. It's a 1:15 a.m. start time, and the Texans are 10-1 to win the game outright. The Patriots 1-20. The spread is set at 15. The Texans plus 15 at 10-11. The Patriots minus 15 at 10-11. The total points line is 44.5. The under 10-11 with the over at 10-11. And it's difficult to envisage a scenario where the Texans come out on top here, Gil. The Patriots did lose out when heavy favourites in the 42nd edition of the Super Bowl to the Giants. But I think it would be a much bigger shock if they were to lose here. How do you make a case for the Texans in this matchup, Gil?
Well, you can make a case for them against the spread just because it's so big. Right, 15 points.
Yeah.
I've even seen it as much as 17 in Las Vegas, up and down the strip. But in terms of the case, you're asking me to make a case for them to win. Here's my case. Brady goes down with a catastrophic injury in quarter number one. How's that?
I think they'd have to kidnap Garoppolo as well, though, Gil.
Maybe so. Maybe they'd have to get rid of two. Listen, Houston's defense is quite solid, right? They have a very credible defense to the Texans. So let's say something nice about them, and that's kind of where it stops. The Texans are, this is historically a big spread. This is for the postseason in the NFL. This is one of the biggest spreads in postseason history. It's at 15. It's tied for the fourth largest since 1978. I think it's tied for the fifth largest spread of all time in the NFL playoffs. If you go all the way back to Super Bowl III, throw that in there as well. And so I won't give you the details. I do so on my podcast, the Beating the Book podcast, game by game. We go through those. It's pretty rare what we're seeing here, and it's justified. The Patriots have been great. Brady has been sensational since coming back into the lineup in Week 5. And the Texans are historically bad in terms of playoff teams, especially division winners. Brock Osweiler scares nobody. And by the way, New England's defense, which we rarely talk about because Brady's so good, they take away big gains. They've only allowed 5 plays of 40 yards or more from scrimmage this season. They've given up the fewest points in the NFL this year, 250. Their point differential as a result is the largest in the NFL, plus 191. So does Houston have anything on offense that can keep up with Brady, even knowing that Houston's defense is pretty good? And the answer is they don't. So there really is no case for them to win this game. And I think you're right. If they were to somehow pull off an upset, I think we would all just be staring at our TV screen for a couple hours before we could process it.
You mentioned the positives for Houston are pretty much the defense, Gil, and only the defense. And Jadeveon Clowney has been key to that defense this season. He's finally realizing his potential now that he's injury free, and he has looked good, and he's getting better and better as the season goes on.
Yeah, he was a beast in college at South Carolina. And then decided to stay an extra year, where it appeared as though he either didn't care, was hurt. Anyway, he had a horrible senior season after just a ridiculous junior season. And so the questions began about Clowney then, but as you mentioned, Houston made him the number one pick in the draft. They had high hopes for him, and the injuries kicked in. At least that's how Jadeveon talks about it now. He's like, look, I was never fully healthy. So all the criticism that he got for being a slow starter in the NFL, people tended to look at his final season in college and conflate the two, I think. But yes, what a beast he has been. And last week against the Connor Cook-led Raiders, we saw that front and center.
Some stats I just want to spin through very quickly before we get your pick on this match, Gil. You mentioned the Houston Texans being the top-ranked defense in the league. Tom Brady is 7-0 all-time at home when facing the league's top-ranked defense. So you can scratch that straight away. And the Houston Texans have only scored 6 points in their last 2 meetings against New England, back in Week 2 earlier on this season and in December 2015. And one more as well. The Patriots averaged over 27 points per game this season, and the 27 that the Texans got against the Raiders last weekend tied their league high. So there are pretty much no positives for the Texans here, but the spread... The spread is 15, yeah. Gil, and the spread is the great equalizer, as often has been mentioned on your podcast.
Yeah, it's the great equalizer indeed. And it's a lot of points. I just don't know, Dave, how the Texans score. Like, I just don't know. Like, can you just close your eyes for a second? Can you imagine Brock Osweiler leading them down the field for a long sustained drive and scoring against the Patriots defense at New England?
No,
I just don't. I can't even picture it. So the problem becomes, 15 is huge, but can the Texans score enough points to keep up with the Patriots, who are obviously going to score some? And, I hate to simplify it like that, right? But I don't know how they score at all. So, the total is at 44 right now.
Yeah.
To me, this is New England or nothing in terms of the spread, and maybe really a lean to the under, because I don't think Houston's going to provide any points at all. I mean, maybe a field goal, maybe something like that, but I don't see the Texans dropping 17 on them. So New England's going to have to do all that towards that total. So for me, it's a lean on New England on the spread and a lean to the under.
I agree. New England Patriots minus 15, 10 to 11. The under 44.5 is also 10 to 11. Let's move on to Sunday's games, and we'll start with the Pittsburgh Steelers at the Kansas City Chiefs. The Steelers 21 to 20 on the money line. The Chiefs are 4 to 5. And this spread is 1.5 with the Steelers plus 1.5 at 10 to 11. The Chiefs minus 1.5 at 10 to 11. And I think, Gil, this is the matchup this weekend that I'm looking forward to most, the Steelers at the Chiefs. Interesting line as well, because on the back of the Steelers' win against Miami in the wildcard round last weekend, I think they opened favourites to go to the Chiefs in Kansas and win. But this line has subsequently adjusted and the Chiefs are now favourites. Do you think that's correct, Gil? Do you think that the line has corrected itself?
I do. There's some speculation as to why that line moved, right, from the initial open of the Steelers being about a 1.5 favorite to what it is now, the Chiefs being a 1.5 or 2-point favorites. Was it because Big Ben was cited in a boot after that game? Because with 4:34 left in that game, Cameron Wake of the Dolphins fell on the back of his leg, and Big Ben got a little banged up. So when Big Ben was seen in the surgical boot after the game in the press conference, one might speculate, oh, all the Chiefs money came pouring in. Or probably more likely, or in tandem with that, folks were just like, you know what, the Chiefs ought to be favored in this game. And I think it's right where it is right now. I think the Chiefs, you know, look, I have a future. I have an AFC futures bet on the Chiefs to win the AFC. And I think this is their year. And I think this is the game of the weekend. I agree with you. I think they get by the Steelers here. The first time these two teams met this season, the Steelers killed the Chiefs 43-14 back in week 4 at Pittsburgh. But not only was the venue different that game in Pittsburgh once again, but the Chiefs didn't have Justin Houston and Tyreek Hill, their absolute firecracker, their spark plug, whether on offense or on special teams. He was not at full Tyreek mode at that point, as I like to say. And so this is a different Chiefs football team. And with Justin Houston and without Justin Houston in the lineup, a huge difference. We talked about the Seahawks with or without Earl Thomas. Same things can be said about Kansas City with Justin Houston. He had surgery on his knee this year. He came back. He was looking good. But then he was forced to sit out the final two games of the year with swelling in that surgically repaired knee. Now he comes back and you wonder, is he at full strength in this game? Is he going to be at partial strength? What's going on? Well, the pass rush of the Chiefs, entirely different with Houston around. With him, they've generated a 5.7% sack rate, pressured the opposing quarterback 34.4% of the time. That's the second highest rate in football, would be with him, completely on the field. Without him, their sack rate falls to 3.9%, gets pressure just 24.3% of dropbacks, which would be in a tie for 28th place with the 49ers. So he's a huge difference maker. Here's the thing, Dave, though, just pulling away from the numbers for a second. Big Ben hasn't looked that good to me. Like, he's made some very suspect passes that we don't really expect from a guy like him. And I can see that happening again on Sunday. Steelers red hot, winners of 8 in a row. But let's not forget the Chiefs, extending back postseasons and into last season. They've won 23 of 28 football games. Mm. And essentially right now you have, although it is a Chiefs tick of a favorite here, essentially you're talking about a win-or-loss situation unless they end up winning by one, right? That's a different story. But in terms of the spread, we're basically talking about a straight-up situation here. Chiefs have won 23 of 28. And then there's the big Andy Reid stat, Dave, which I know you're probably getting to, so I'll preempt you here. Andy Reid, head coach of the Kansas City Chiefs, when coming off a bye, everybody likes to throw this around, and I think there's some validity to it, 16-2 straight up career coming off a bye week is Andy Reid, including 3-0 straight up in three divisional playoff games when he was head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles coming off a bye in that divisional round. So this is a guy, you give him an extra week to prepare, and history tells us he's pretty good. Alex Smith, I believe, will be mistake-free in this game, and I think the Chiefs ultimately overcome the amazing offense or potentially amazing offense of the Pittsburgh Steelers, because I think the Chiefs generate turnovers. I think Tyreek Hill makes his mark one way or the other, and I think the Chiefs get it done.
I didn't have the stat either, Gil, so I'm glad you did preempt me there.
No.
So okay. I didn't have that stat, so I'm happy about that.
You're usually so impeccably prepared, Dave, that I just assumed you know how it is.
It's kind of you to say, Gil. It's kind of you to say. I think Le'Veon Bell must get 40 touches in this matchup, Gil. I think they're going to try and ride Le'Veon Bell, aren't they, the Steelers? Because, as you mentioned, Ben Roethlisberger maybe not quite on his A game at the moment, but there's no doubting that Bell in the backfield is.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, and the Chiefs' run defense has shown, you know, holes in it this year, certainly at times. And so that's going to be their strategy for sure. Le'Veon, Le'Veon, and more Le'Veon, which we said before last week, that's what the Steelers would do. And that's indeed what the Steelers did against the Dolphins. But the Dolphins had the second worst defense against the run in all of football headed into that game. So they were clearly going to go Le'Veon in that game. You know, Bell's unbelievable. And this patience that he shows in the backfield, waiting for the blocks to develop and then just shooting the gap. We never quite seen a running back like this before. This is really different from any historical comparison. Like, I don't remember a back ever just kind of bouncing around in the backfield, waiting for his offensive line to hold the blocks and then doing his thing. He's really one of the great running backs, certainly of this generation, and probably headed to the Hall of Fame one day. One day, though, against the Chiefs, though, here on Sunday, can he do it in a tough environment? We should mention this is the one game, too, Dave, this weekend, where weather might be a factor. So it would be an advantage for the Steelers if we do get freezing rain, which is about a 50% chance of freezing rain in this game. If that happens, if there is inclement weather, I think that benefits the Steelers. So Steelers ought to hope for really bad weather in this game, and that would be a running game battle, and that would definitely favor the Steelers at that point.
There is a clip out there online, the clip I think you're alluding to, where Le'Veon Bell receives the ball from Ben Roethlisberger and just stands there almost still for two or three seconds, or for a couple of seconds, while the offensive line do their work, and then he shoots through the gap. And that's something we've not, as you mentioned, Gil, not seen in the National Football League before. Do you think the money comes for the Steelers in this matchup later on, or do you think the public go for the Steelers?
I'd like to see that clip. I wasn't even referring to one particular
right.
clip, just him in general. It's probably they probably picked a comical one where he's at a dead stop.
Yeah.
I don't know where the money comes in here. I mean, Pittsburgh is definitely the more public of these two teams, so one would think that you might see an influx of Pittsburgh money at the end. But you know what I've learned more than anything this year? And I do a weekly video in Las Vegas, Dave, with Jay Rood, who's the VP of MGM Resorts International Race and Sports Book in Las Vegas. So he runs all of the MGM properties books, which is 10 deep in Las Vegas. And every week I ask him that question that you just asked me. And he's the bookmaker. Right. He's the guy's like, where do you expect the money to come in? I always ask him. And he will tell you now openly. He goes, man, have I been wrong all year long. So to guess such a thing is merely a guess. You know, I don't know. I could see, quite honestly, I could see this creeping up towards Kansas City -3 by game time just as easily as I could see it going the other way.
The Chiefs -1.5, the pick at 10-11 for Gil. And we move to the final game this weekend, the Packers at the Cowboys. A Green Bay 9-5 on the money line, the Dallas Cowboys 5-11. And this spread is 4.5, with the Packers receiving the points at 10-11, the Cowboys -4.5 at 10-11. And I've got to start here, Gil, by issuing an apology to Aaron Rodgers, because last weekend, I said on this podcast I was taking the Giants. I thought they could win the game outright, but I knew the writing was on the wall when they completely dominated the opening quarter of the New York Giants. And they were only 6 points to nil up, Gil. I thought, well, that's we know how this story ends.
Yeah, well, you're shrewd for knowing that at that moment, because I think everybody who was on the Giants thought that. And by the way, gun to head, if you recall last week for me, it wasn't a play for me either way, but when I was forced to choose, I would have taken the points on the Giants last week too. But it was definitely the one of the four games where I wanted no part of the side. But you're absolutely right. The Giants dominated the first quarter, and they just couldn't cash in. And, you know, by the time the Hail Mary was executed, and I use the word executed in quotes, at the end of the first half, you kind of knew, oh, man. And even the Giants, by the way, that game was 14-13 midway through the third quarter.
Yeah.
When Mike McCarthy, for whatever reason, decided to go for a fourth and short in his own territory in the third quarter. So, and the Giants subsequently capitalized. So, really, the Green Bay Packers in a quarter and a half, or a quarter and three quarters of football, just went crazy on the Giants late last week. But the Giants' Achilles, and we'll get to this game here on Sunday, but the Giants' Achilles all year has been the fact that they just don't score points on offense. And I think I did mention that last week on the show, which is at some point you can have the greatest defense in the world, which the Giants had a fabulous defense, but they hadn't scored 20 points in a game since a November game against the Browns at Cleveland. So ultimately it's like, what are you really talking about? Do you really think you're going to be able to keep up with Aaron Rodgers? You got to score. You got to cash in. And they didn't, as you point out in the first quarter. And that's where the writing was on the wall already. As far as this game is concerned, I mean, let's start with what you said initially. You going to bet against Aaron Rodgers? I mean, that's really what this comes down to, right? Now, the Packers are getting points here, and they should be getting points because Dallas is the number one seed, and we can talk till we're blue in the face about Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott and how great they've been. This is also a rematch, as we mentioned. This is a Week 6 game that it's a rematch for. In Week 6 at Green Bay, Dallas beat the Packers by 2 touchdowns, and they did so by running all over the Packers' run defense. And before that game, we had 5 games of sample size, very small sample size, and at that point, Green Bay had given up very little on the ground to their previous opponents. And so at that point, it was the number one run offense against the number one run defense, and the Cowboys just destroyed them. I asked Warren Sharp, who's a great handicapper here in the U.S., great NFL handicapper. He was on my show this week, and I asked him, is there any reason to think anything differently about the Cowboys' run offense against the Packers' run defense, or just their offense against Packers' defense in general here? And he's like, nope, none at all, basically. So, you know, that side of the ball is going to be tough for the Packers. They're really, it's like, what are they going to do? They're going to stack 8 in the box to stop Zeke, and then Dak Prescott, who's been really good downfield, he's going to exploit a weekend Packers defensive secondary, and then it really just comes down to, all right, well, that's one thing, but can the Cowboys stop Aaron Rodgers, Dave? That's the question.
Aaron Rodgers might be without his big weapon. It didn't matter last week against the New York Giants because Randall Cobb filled in perfectly, but Jordy Nelson went down with a rib injury last week, and he's questionable, Gil. The absence of Nelson, would that be a factor that would sway you here, Gil, or do you think Rodgers just finds a way to find the end zone anywhere?
It's a great question because, like, if you and I were his wide receivers, Dave, let's say Aaron Rodgers was throwing a me and you, would he find a way? You know, I'm obviously exaggerating, but you get the point where it's like, is he so great that it does not matter if it's Jordy Nelson or not? Now, obviously, the answer to the question, does Jordy Nelson matter, is of course he does. He got the rib injury second quarter of the wild card win against the Giants. Mike McCarthy, the Packers head coach, has said if he doesn't practice Saturday, tomorrow, we're recording this on Friday, if he doesn't practice tomorrow, he's not playing. And, you know, we did the thing with Earl Thomas with the Seahawks. We did the thing with Justin Houston with the Chiefs on or off the field. Let's do it with Jordy Nelson and how it affects Aaron Rodgers in terms of QBR, which is scored out of 100. With Nelson, career, Rodgers, 77.3. Without Nelson, 63.7. Passer rating, which is scored out of some nebulous 158 number. With Nelson on the field, 108.1 is Rodgers. Without him, 95.7. So it matters. Statistically, Jordy Nelson matters to the Green Bay Packers. And the Packers defense, by the way, just getting back to that for a second, they've been significantly worse on the road this year. They've allowed 8 more points per game away from Lambeau than they have at Lambeau itself. But here's the thing, and Aaron Rodgers went a long way towards talking about Randall Cobb after last week's game. He said, we're just a better football team with Randall Cobb on the field. Guess what? They're really good with Randall Cobb and Jordy Nelson, though. That's the problem. But Dallas's defense is exploitable. I mean, let's talk about that just for a second before, you know, we put this to rest. Dallas finished 19th in pass defense DVOA. That's a stat from Football Outsiders, an advanced stats site here in the U.S. And they did so 19th in the league, which is, you know, worse than, you know, bottom half, we're talking. They did so by mostly avoiding the league's great passing games. But when they did play great offenses, they got crushed. Kirk Cousins and Washington's defense, Kirk Cousins put up a 103.6 passer rating, averaged 8.2 yards per attempt in two games against the Cowboys this year. Ben Roethlisberger, when he got to play the Cowboys, he threw for 408 yards, three touchdowns against Dallas. And their defense is particularly susceptible against tight ends, where they're third to last in the NFL, opposing tight ends averaging 75.5 passing yards per game alone. Second most in the league for opposing tight ends. So, you know, Jared Cook could be a huge weapon for Aaron Rodgers this weekend. So, you know, we get back to the spread. What do we like there? Listen, you're giving me the points with Aaron Rodgers. I am contractually obligated to take them. That's my answer.
Plus 4.5, the Packers at 10 to 11. The Dallas Cowboys are healthy at least, Gil. You talked about them maybe being susceptible on defense. They have got Maurice Claiborne back at the perfect time there, star cornerback. And the defensive ends, DeMarcus Lawrence and Tyrone Crawford, should play as well. So that's going to be a big factor for the Dallas Cowboys, a big fillip for the Dallas Cowboys coming into this match.
This is one of those games, Dave, where if the Cowboys roll, and I don't think anybody would be surprised, even those of us who would take the Packers, right? I don't think anybody would be surprised if the Cowboys just, you know, in one of 100 outcomes, right? Let's say if you simulated this game 100 times, there's going to be a lot of those games where the Cowboys just roll and crush them, right? So that could happen. But if the Cowboys find themselves in a dogfight or find themselves behind in this game, how quickly do you think the narrative is going to be, oh boy, the rookie quarterback, Dak Prescott, they should have gone with Romo, you know? It's just going to be, I mean, I'm almost rooting for that more than anything, just for the drama of that.
You mentioned the Rodgers Hail Mary pass, which has become customary now, Gil, almost as if it's expected last weekend. I thought the movement to find a Devontae Adams for the first Green Bay Packers touchdown was even better. I don't think I've ever seen a quarterback move like that in the pocket.
He's been doing that more and more as his career has gone on, where he does this dance thing where he doesn't really move a lot, but he feels the pressure, as they like to say. He does a dance, he does a spin, he bounces around. You know, the Packers' offensive line deserves way more credit than they're getting. So we tend to focus on the fact that Rodgers is so great at avoiding defenders, but man, those guys are holding their blocks pretty well most of the time. So Rodgers has this just cartoon-like amount of time back there, which he obviously extends with his brilliance as well. Jordy Nelson, we talk about, you know, what he means to Aaron Rodgers. He's particularly great on those kinds of plays, right? Jordy Nelson figures out a way to get open on those plays, and Rodgers really relies on him. So they'll miss that if Jordy can't play. But again, if Jordy practices tomorrow, he will play. Yeah. This is not a done deal yet, though it doesn't look great. I mean, you know, based on the injury, rib injuries like that where you have to be taken to the hospital, it's not a good sign.
What's your best bet this weekend, Gil, if you were just placing one wager?
One wager. Mine is the Chiefs. Yeah. Chiefs minus -2. I know that's counter to most people, but this to me, I don't know, it's like a whole bunch of years of football watching. If you ever read the Malcolm Gladwell book, Blink, the premise of the book, Blink, is that we make decisions in life, which we call, you know, on the spur of the moment, but really they are informed by years of experience and being able to process that information in the blink of an eye, or when we're at our best, that's what we can do. It's kind of how I feel about the Chiefs here. This is just one of these home divisional playoff games, a team that is at, you know, in the historical trajectory of the Chiefs right now. They get it done. You know, I don't know what happens after this, but they get it done this weekend. I really like the Chiefs. The other one that I like Seattle getting those points. I know a lot of people are terrified by that Atlanta offense. Can the Seahawks keep up with that offense? But you know how the cliche goes, Dave. Defense wins championships. And Atlanta doesn't have that. So I like Seattle with the points.
Very good.
That's my second best.
Very good, very good. Thank you for your company, Gil, on this podcast. It's much appreciated, as always. Do check out Gil's podcasts at Beating the Book, the Super Pod, the Mega Pod, that's out now, Gil.
Yes, it is out now. It's supersized. It's really long for those people who like long podcasts. I'm your man. For those people who hate long podcasts, well, sue me. It's the divisional round. It won't happen again. But yeah, it's a big show, and we cover it all for sure.
Do check that out at Beating the Book. You can follow myself on Twitter at D Kellner. Check out all the lines for the divisional round of playoff matches this weekend in the National Football League by going to sports.williamhill.com and clicking on the American football page. Check out all William Hill's podcasts at audioboom.com as well. Again, type in William Hill. And if you're having a bet on the American football action this weekend, the very best of luck.
Get a £5 free bet every week with Offer Club from William Hill.
Hey-o, let's go, let's go.
Simply stake a total of £20 or more across the week on pre-match football accumulators with four or more selections, and you'll get a £5 free bet on the Friday. Plus, you can get on faster and easier than ever with our new and improved mobile betting experience. Join William Hill Offer Club on mobile or online now. When the fun stops, stop.